This Twin Peaks Investing Podcast is brought to you in association with SharePad from ShareScoop, the UK's number one investment data and analysis software for private investors and traders. Visit ShareScoop.co.uk and discover the advantage.
Hello and welcome to Twin Peaks Investing. This is the podcast brought to you by Peter Higgins at Conkers 3 and Peter at Wheelie Dealer on Twitter. Hi, Pete. How are you today, mate?
Yeah, good, mate. How are you?
Very well, thank you, sir.
Cool.
So, Pete, where would you like to start, mate? There's loads going on, politically or otherwise.
In the US and in the UK. Let's not overdo the politics. We've had a few bits of feedback, people saying, oh, we went on too much about politics on the last one, blah, blah, blah. I think it's a fair point, but I think we can't just ignore politics. I mean, in many ways, it's very relevant. One that's actually just come up literally within the last sort of like 20 minutes. I was watching that, the daily briefing thing. It's like the worst afternoon TV quiz show ever. where they ask loads of stupid questions and the people answering never seem to know the answers. They always seem to pass it off to somebody else, But one of the things that came up there was Grant Shapps, the transport secretary, was talking about transport and stuff, obviously. And he was talking about cycling and how they're going to be giving these 50 quid fix your push bike vouchers, and they're also doing, if you buy a push bike you can get a contribution towards it and things like that, which is all really relevant stuff, obviously, to something like Halfords HFD. Obviously that's really positive, so you can't just ignore politics. You've got to sort of keep your handle on things.
Yes, that's very true. The other retail outlets that sell bikes are available.
Yes, indeed, yes. I mean, the other obvious one, and this usually comes up every time the Chancellor does a budget, is house builders. So often they do some sort of bung for the house builders, which is good for the house building sector. So, so you've got to sort of keep on top of these things. But yes, linking politics can get extremely tedious, as we're all finding at the moment.
I think people have just got to the point where they're fed up. And I said this to you a while back, it's very polarizing, Pete, depending on your politics or what party you voted for, whether you voted Remain or Leave, you're in a certain camp, and almost it appears that never the twain shall meet. So for this podcast and maybe some others, let's just dispense with that and just crack on with talking about shares.
Yeah, we got loads we can talk about, so we'll just crack on.
Okie dokie, mate. So where would you like to start, mate?
Well, I'll tell you what, mate. It's a really important one for me personally, actually. There's a company, I think it's called Gresham House Energy Storage Fund or something like that. The code is GRID, right? And what they do is they invest in battery storage facilities. Now, obviously, as the world goes more green and more recycle-friendly and, all that stuff, and as we do more solar power and wind power, energy storage is going to be a big thing, because obviously solar power makes loads of power during the day. It's pretty rubbish at night, so they need to store it overnight, and things like that. So my question to you, because I'm actually considering whether I should myself invest in GRID. And my question to you is, these like battery storage facilities, do you think they could have a problem in that they could get superseded by a newer battery technology? So GRID could buy like a big battery farm or something, whatever you call it. And then you could find in, say, 5-10 years that this stuff's completely obsolete and worth nothing. What do you think?
I think that's a very, very good question, Pete. I think the answer to that is all technology gets superseded eventually. And I would hope that Gresham House Energy Storage and the investments that they make they're looking at all the different innovations and the time frames and timelines of that, those technologies being superseded, and have a plan with regarding the investments that they make and the companies that they invest in, to never be in a situation where they have not got the most innovative companies within their portfolio. So yes, every tech gets superseded at some point. You know, I think everyone remembers, you know, what was it? What were we called? Betamax videos, and you know, and videos per se. You know, blockbusters. Everything gets superseded, Pete. And at some point, you know, the various phones that we've got now, there won't be a phone. There'll probably be a chip within our forearm or our fingers and all that, doing all manner of different things.
That's the point, yeah.
So with regards to energy,
yeah,
other energies out there, storage and storage energy facilities and types out there already, and it's about looking at that. My concern at the moment would be that you've had the shares. I've just pulled the shares up here, Pete. They had obviously, like everything else, they got absolutely hammered.
Oh, they tanked.
In during March through to April.
Yeah,
they went from £1.10 per share, if that's the balance of it, all the way down to just shy of 90, 92, 93.
Yeah,
bounced back to 108.5.
So they did like a V, didn't they?
Did a V, yeah. We'll get on to talking more about V's later on.
I'm sure.
But right now, as with all things, and I said this all the way back to when we were talking about Woodford in the past. Yeah. I don't like buying funds or anything else when they're trading at a premium, Pete. Yeah?
Yeah. It's...
So right now, the NAV is around £1.05, £1.02, yeah?
Yeah.
It's trading at 108.5. So you've got a premium of 8%-ish. Yeah?
Yeah.
And the average 12... I always look at the average 12-month discount or premium, and the average is 5.27, so it's above its average.
Yeah.
So to me, that's a premium on top of a premium. It could go higher. Could end up at 110. It could end 120. Who knows? But yeah. I don't like buying £1 coins for £1.08 or £1.20. I prefer to buy them at 50 or 70 or 85 pence.
No, that makes a lot of sense. I mean, it's a funny one because I hold Primary Health Properties, PHP.
Yeah.
And that I bought on quite a high premium to NAV.
Okay.
Like 13, 14%. Believe it or not, it's now on like 30% premium to NAV or something insane. But it's like, it still pays something like 3.5% dividend yield or more. And the thing is, because they've been so good at their execution in terms of buying the Medics fund, which was a similar sort of thing, and that they're going into Ireland in a big way and buying health centres in Ireland, and of course with quantitative easing and bond yields on their backside, it's like, you know, a lot investors are prepared to pay up a high premium to get that yield. And I sort of think maybe Grid's in a similar camp. And I'm thinking, for me personally, right, I think what is the yield on Grid? I think it's about 4.5%. I don't know if you've got it there easily to see, but what I'm thinking there is, you know, if I was to buy Grid with a 5-year time horizon for myself holding it or whatever, you know, it's probably going to be trickling me out nice little dividends every year. And if we have another market drop where it drops to 90p again or whatever it does, I've got the opportunity then to buy more of it and therefore get my average down and to get it at a discount. And I'm locking in more pretty damn reliable dividend, which is really what I'm after, because I'm really thinking of it for my income portfolio. It's a tough one.
I mean, the yield at the moment is saying, I'm using another website here, Pete, so it could be inaccurate. It's saying it's 6.45 yield.
Oh, mate, so you're talking me into it.
This current price, that's a nice, you know, chunky sort of dividend where, you know, as we go back again, you know, banks and savings accounts are giving you absolutely nothing.
Yeah.
So 6.45, you know, that's something to behold. It's at a premium, so you're paying up for that dividend.
Yeah.
If it goes back to estimated NAV, which is, you know, 1.5, you're still sitting there, you know,
getting a nice dividend.
Getting a nice dividend, and hopefully, if there's more, as we spoke about many moons ago, Pete, more and more money is going into ESG funds.
Exactly. Yeah.
People want to know that they're doing something ethical regarding the planet and so on and so forth. So that could end up with more growth, more money going towards it. They make more investments. So the premium comes down, but the estimated NAV increases, which is what could be beneficial to you.
Yeah.
So that's a possibility, mate. You know,
on the couple of other aspects, on what we were discussing about the battery technology, thinking about it, right?
Yeah.
You made me realise, actually, that the battery technology is probably going to get better steadily over time. It's not going to be like today we have one sort of technology and then next year we have a completely different technology that is double the efficiency or something. It's unlikely to be that fast a change, I would think. So I guess what I'm saying is that, yes, they'll have assets that they bought before today that will at some point get more obsolete. But if they keep buying more assets today, more assets in 3 months' time, more assets in 6 months' time, more assets in a year, they're actually buying newer technologies as the time goes on. So maybe that in itself lowers the risk, if you see what I mean.
Yeah, that's what I'm alluding to, Pete. And they've not been around long. They've got a 5-year or a 7-year or a 10-year plan with regards to what they're looking to do. And invariably, as they're in the market longer and people become more aware of what they're doing, more funds could actually go their way. So they'll have more and more assets under management for them to deploy and invest in the assets they want to invest in. So yes, it could be a something to consider. But I mean, obviously, with hindsight, you would have bought it when the dip was in.
Well, yeah, but I didn't have any money then, and I was absolutely bricking myself. So you know,
this goes to the discussion I was going to have with you later on about why it's important to have cash on your in your portfolio and not be completely and fully invested, because when opportunities arise, you don't have the cash there to deploy or to even average down, which, you know, we've spoken about before as well, is fraught with risk. But having the cash gives you the option as to whether or not there's stuff in your portfolio that you want to buy or to add to, or brand new stocks that you've always wanted and liked, admired, but the cash wasn't, you know, if the cash is not there, you can't then go, let me have some of that. You know, it's down 20%, 30%. I'm having some of that now, you know?
Yeah, it's so difficult, isn't it? What, I mean, on that lines, right, a couple of questions about that, right? What do you think is a sensible level of cash to always carry in your portfolio?
That's a tough one, Pete.
It's a pig, isn't it?
There's no right number, Pete.
My brain explodes about that. I really struggle with it.
It shouldn't, Pete. What you should do, and I say this to everybody, right?
Well, I do things slightly differently, which we'll get on to, but let's carry on down this route, yeah?
Okay. What you should do as an individual, right, is run your own risk profile of what it is that you want to attain, what are your goals and ambitions and blah, 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 right?
And then
you have to work out your own psychology regarding the volatility of the markets. I keep banging on about this, right? And eventually people will cotton on why. We saw people wailing and gnashing of teeth between February and March and April, right? And
I had a lot of tears, mate. Yeah, I heard.
Tears as well.
And they were mostly mine.
And we were dealing with the carnage and helping people as best we could on direct DMs and all the rest of it. Loads of people, you know what I mean? We were doing it, Pete.
Oh, I was on the phone all day.
And a couple of others, right? And we were fortunate enough, because of the stimulus and all the money thrown at the various markets, to have seen a very sharp return of numerous stocks. StealthServe put a great tweet out, I think it was last night, 400-ish of stocks are up, actually up year to date, of the 2,000 and odd that are out there. Okay, nice. only 400. The other 1,700 and odd are not still. The markets have moved, Pete, from sub 4,000, FTSE 100, and today closed at 6,341. That's a big, big move. But not all stocks have rallied.
So, they were sub 5,000, wasn't it? Was it
Sub 4,000, yeah.
Was it 4.9, wasn't it, they went to?
Yeah, 4.9-ish or something
like that. So sub 5,000, yeah.
So we've now gone up to 6,300, 400. So some people are going, yeah, hey, and they're back at, some of them are up for the year, some of them are flat for the year, some of them are just only down 5, 10, 15%. Some people are still down 20%, depending on what stocks they've got. But this goes back to what I was saying before, right? You have to work out your risk profile, Pete. Why is it important to have cash? Because then you are able to pick up some of the bargains when you have a downturn. If you're not averaging down, you're able to buy additional stocks which are on sale.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, let's just talk about some of those, some examples of stocks that absolutely got smashed.
Well, mate, before that, sorry, can we just do a bit more on the cash thing?
Yeah,
is that right?
Go for it.
So let's think about it this way, right? Say, for instance, across all your wealth, you got house, you got, I don't know, whatever you got, yeah? Let's say across all of your stuff, you decide, I'm going to have 20% in cash, right? And that goes off and it gets parked in your bank account or whatever, yeah?
Yep.
You then say, I don't know, 50% of my money I'm putting into shares, right? And that is in your share portfolio account, right? And so ignore the cash that you've already put somewhere else, because that's like sacrosanct, you can't touch it, yeah? So in your portfolio that you know that you're doing stuff with, how much of that do you reckon is a sensible amount to have in cash? So do you have like 10% of that in cash just in case there's a rainy day? And my other question is, sorry, this is getting really complicated. I said to you, it's going to be really easy.
I feel like a news night, mate, with four questions in one phrase.
It is. I am Emily Maitlis. You see my hair? It's like a bush. Right. So say, for instance, you keep 10% of cash. And then when there's a big drop or whatever, you invest that 10%. How do you get that money back up again so you're ready for next time? See what I mean?
Wow. Okay. Let me take
a... That's really hit you between the
eyes. Yeah. Let me just roll it back a little bit. Okay. Let's talk about life in general first up, right?
Yeah.
This is what I've always done personally, okay? So if you're looking at life in general, Pete, and you're running your household and you're paying your bills and you've got your car and your 2.1 kids or whatever it is, right?
Yeah.
You know what your outgoings are per month, okay? You know what your outgoings are per year, including your holidays and your other stuff, your sundries, all the stuff that you don't need that you buy. You know what you right?
Yeah.
What you should have, right, if at all possible, yeah, and not just living hand to mouth, is to be able to have a minimum, Pete, yeah, of 6 months to a year's worth of income sitting there in your little slush fund, rainy day, in case everything goes pear-shaped. If you lose your job, yeah, your partner rolls up one day and says, I'm out of here, I'm done, we're done. You know, divorce rates are going to be sky high once this lockdown's finished. Yeah, it used to be January the 3rd or the 5th or whatever was the highest divorce rate numbers. Yeah, it's now going to be post-lockdown.
Yeah.
Yeah. You ask anybody who's working in the litigation / lawyers / you know, divorce, blah, 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 then they're absolutely ringing the bells like it's Christmas with the number of people that are getting divorced, right? So you need to have cash sitting there in your non-invested portfolio to be able to have access to, yeah, for 1 year, maybe 2 years, okay?
Yeah, I know.
So bear with me. The second part of your question is portfolio cash. How much cash is the right amount? Okay.
Yeah.
That is an individual thing again, Pete, right?
Yeah, of course.
So I've, over the last couple of years, I think I was on 39 takeovers up until December. There's one stock I've got at the moment that's being taken over, which I've not mentioned to anybody, which is nice. Yeah.
That's brilliant.
So that makes 40. But that's enabled me to have lots and lots of cash sitting on my balance.
Yeah,
but ordinarily I wouldn't have that because I was very, very positive and bullish of the market. When you're not as bullish in the market, individually, you have to make that decision as to how much cash you want to go to.
Yeah.
What is your risk profile? Are you happy to just roll it out? Because you know what? in 3 years, 5 years' time, the markets are always up historically until they're not.
Yeah.
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 So for me personally, having ordinarily around 10, 12, 15% cash enables me to go and dip in and out of the markets when they have their little hiccups, or, you know, little, I see opportunities there to buy a stock that I ordinarily wouldn't buy because the markets has given me a gift.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right now, I'm above that 15% level because I'm cautious on the markets. But what I've been doing, as I said to you before, back in Feb, I'd already been selling quite a few things, and I sold some more more recently.
Yeah, because you were up to like 50, 60% cash, weren't you?
No.
It was quite high. You were up to quite high compared to what you normally are.
Compared to what I normally was, yeah, I was higher. But what I did was sold off some of the stocks I didn't have the conviction with.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then added to some stocks, and I bought some more stocks like Hikma and so forth recently, and some others.
Yeah.
And my cash levels now is still relatively high in on average compared to where they've been over the last 5 years.
Yeah.
And look at the markets and going around that. Everyone has to make their choice. If I said to you that a binary number of, you know what, you should always have 6% cash, that doesn't fit with everybody, Pete.
No, that's right.
And it may not fit with you. So
I think you said 10 to 15% instinctively to me feels about right.
But that needs to be an individual choice because...
Yes, it does.
When you're,
I run mine at naught.
When
I do. I run mine at naught, believe it or not.
That's fine. But the thing is, Pete, when we had March and April and the opportunities were there, unless you had that 20 grand or whatever it was for the new ISA money, you couldn't do anything.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. So is cash king? Yes, it is, because it allows you flexibility. Yeah. It allows you to seize an opportunity. Yeah. If you've got cash in your balance and you see a house down the road and for some reason the owners are doing a fire sale on the house, yeah, and your house is worth 250 grand, 300 grand, and they're desperate to sell it, and you see them putting up for a ridiculous price, you could buy that house, Pete.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
It's no different to a car, to a bike, to a yacht, whatever it is. Yeah, the cash gives you the opportunity to take additional risks should you choose to. If you don't want to take the risk, that cash can sit there until another time.
It's like Warren Buffett says, isn't it? It's like cash is an option.
Is an option.
It gives you option, yeah. No, I...
gives you optionality. So the percentage figure is down to you. If you want to be fully invested all of the time, that is your choice. But when the markets cave in and you're looking thinking, oh, I can't wait for my stock to get back to break even, you can't even average down, which in itself is fraught with risks.
Yeah. Well, obviously, for me, myself, obviously, I do things a bit weird. Do you know, I'm coming to the conclusion that I do everything weird to compare to everyone else.
No, you you don't do anything weird. You do things with what you've learned and what you're happy with as your own strategy. Everyone has to follow their own strategy.
Yeah, exactly. And it's a wise thing to do, to listen to people talking about their different strategies and to think about those strategies and think, well, actually, that sounds a good idea. I ought to do that, or and try it yourself or whatever. That's the clever thing to do, isn't it?
The clever thing to do, Pete, is to constantly refine your strategy, constantly learn more about what is going on. What is actually going on in the underlying markets right now? Yeah? What is going on right now in the markets is that you've had global stimulus every single where, right? You've had the ECB come out with the, I think they called it the PEP. Have you heard about the PEP, Pete?
Oh, was this today?
No. This is today and been back since June.
There was some news March. Today, wasn't there, or something? I haven't heard it. I just knew they were going to announce something.
Yeah, they announced it. The Pandemic Emergency Purchasing Plan.
Oh, God.
Right? It's now up to 1.35 trillion. Yeah? So we're going to carry on buying and buying and buying. And the date just keeps being pushed out. We're going to continue pumping money into markets until we see it no longer needs it. Yeah. So initially it was up until, it extended until June 2021. And now it's going to be at least until the end of 2022. So for markets, that's like, okay, more money's going to be pumped in.
More juice.
Yeah? More juice. More crack for the crack addicts. And in America, more and more stimulus. And you're going to carry on getting the market squeezed potentially higher right up until the point we get the elections in the US in November. Yeah. Or a deal is made in Europe regarding, or no deal regarding what the UK is doing. And then the markets are going to be like, okay, no more need for this. And the realities all those companies that have cut 20, 30, 40% of their workforce and said, you know what, our revenues are going to be down 15, 20, 35% on our next half year results and our next full year results. The realities of those are going to have to bite at some point.
Yeah, that's so true. I mean, do you know, mate, I've got to say this, right? I've got to say it. I can't hold back.
Oh dear, you've got me worried, Pete. Don't.
This is a classic. You know, in the last podcast, I threatened you and I threatened our poor, long-suffering, enduring listeners with GDP. Oh, mate, I've got to say it because it's really relevant. I'll try and do it really quick. Please, please, please.
Go for it, Pete. If you hear me snoozing, then you know what.
Here we go. I might not remember it correctly, but right. Okay, GDP can be measured in a couple of different ways, right? One of the ways that GDP is measured is that they add together consumer spending, government spending. I'm having to write these down so I don't get it wrong. So they add together consumer spending, government spending, investment spending, and that is government and private sector and whatever. And they add exports minus imports, right? And that those four things make up GDP. So it's consumer, government, investment, and exports minus imports. Now, exports minus imports you can ignore, right? Because it's pretty blinking small and irrelevant, really. The investment one is really important, yeah? So that's got to stay high to keep GDP high. And obviously, private sector investment will be dropping, won't it? Most likely, yeah?
Yeah.
Consumer spending in a recession is going to drop. So to keep GDP up, government spending needs to go mental. You know, government needs to spend loads to make up for the shortfall in consumer spending, and it needs to spend loads to make up for the shortfall in investment. Now, what it tells us is that if the government goes bonkers and crazy and spending enough, and not only does that mean Rishi Sunak making all these policy announcements, the problem is the government's actually got to spend it. The trouble is they make announcements and they can't physically spend the money because of all the bureaucracy and the admin and the laws and all that stuff. But if they can do it, GDP could stay up a lot higher than people expect.
Very good point. Very well made, Pete.
Did it make any sense?
Yes, it did.
Yeah.
The caveat of that, though, Pete, is that regardless of how much stimulus you actually throw at the economy, with regards to the stock market, those individual companies still need to generate revenues and profits.
Dead right.
And if those if they're running under a racy PE of 40, 50, 60, 70, and then they suddenly go, you know what, we told you back in March, 2020, and in April 2020, that our full-year revenues were going to be down 20, 30, 40, 50%. Here we now see ourselves, the revenues are down 30, 40, 50%. What do you think the market's going to do when the price is wherever it is, when they actually deliver those poor results? They're going to go, and the shares are going to decline.
Yeah, do you know, it's an interesting one as well, right, on that. One of the things I'm noticing at the moment is there's a lot of trading updates coming out, but obviously not many results because results statements have been sort of like delayed, which is fair enough. Mm-hmm. One of the things that I'm noticing, and obviously it's in every company, but I'm noticing it on a lot, I would say on the majority, right? I would say most of the updates I'm reading, and remember, I only read updates for sort of fairly quality stuff. I don't bother with, you know, the real garbage. Most of the updates I'm reading, the expectations are incredibly low. The expectations are on the floor. And in loads of circumstances, they're actually beating those expectations. So it's like it's bad, but it's not as bad as it was expected to be. Or it's not as, it's like April and May are actually a lot better than March was. If it's that kind of thing, or no, the other way around, it's more like late April and May are better than April was.
Yeah, I've noticed that as well, Pete, regarding a couple of stocks. I think what a lot of companies have done is they've put down their worst case scenarios back in February and March.
Yes.
How
yes.
Really, you know, they were the shock and awe of it all. And some of those companies have actually exceeded that. What I would say to people, though, is to look back at what their expectations were prior to that shock and awe trading update that they gave in February and March to what they're saying now.
Yeah.
And what were the expectations for the year prior to the COVID-related downgrades and so on and so forth that they made? Because that's the benchmark you need to be looking at, yeah?
I think also, though, and we discussed it, I remember talking about this on a podcast several podcasts ago, where I said it's about the direction of travel. So it's like, yes, we know things are absolutely blinking awful, and, you know, but the direction of travel is for improvement. And especially when you've got, you know, interest rates on the floor, you get no money on cash, you can't get any money out of bonds. It's like people are almost happy to buy into those stories because they think it's an improving story. And in many cases, it is. So I think it could be mistaken to sort of get too negative about it.
Yeah, and Pete, you're absolutely spot on. But I don't really think I'll caveat that and say it's not necessarily being negative on it. I think the point I'm trying to make, and I've said this before, is that you don't know what you don't know what you don't know. It's about the fact you need to be cautious. Yeah, if you are uber bullish in the markets right now, right, were you uber bullish in the market at the abyss of March and April? You weren't, right? Many people weren't. They were absolutely panic stricken. They're on a roller coaster going, I feel sick, get me off here. There's pandemonium, Pete. Hence the reason why your DM box and my DM box is full of people in tears going, what the hell? I've got this portfolio here that I've been working hard on for the past 5 years, and 2 years of what I was doing has been completely wiped out. I feel like giving up. Those are the conversations you and I were having with people.
Oh yeah.
You know, so now it's almost as if people have forgotten what happened to the markets in March and April. Yeah, and I've said this before. I don't know where the markets are going to go, Pete. My view is now we could be squeezed higher. Yeah, but at some point or other, these markets are going to have to get back to reality of what's actually going on in the real place of work. There are people that we talk to on Twitter who are not going to be returning back to work, Pete.
Yeah. Oh yeah, I mean
there are people that have been made redundant.
Yeah,
already the furlough's not going to continue for them. Yeah, there are people whose works have said, you know what, 300 of you are not coming back, 400 of you are not coming back. British Airways, have you seen what they've been doing recently? They're looking to sack everybody and then get them back on a lower salary.
Oh yeah.
So there's loads of stuff going on underlying, which you have to be mindful of and not just look at all my stock prices of my portfolio are going up.
Yeah. Yeah. Joe, you know, it's funny again, thinking about that. I mean, I think it splits again into sectors. So it's about sectors and expectations. So in the example of the airlines, right, we all know they're absolutely shot to pieces. Yeah. Expectations are absolutely on the floor. So I think we're almost getting to the point where if an airline survives, its stock price will probably go up simply because it didn't go bust. You sort of mean we're at that kind of level. And so that's one side of it. The other side is when you've got a really good business. So I'll give you an example, right? Fevertree. Yeah. Fevertree came out with results today. Okay. It's update today. And they've kept investing right through the whole fiasco. They haven't taken any furlough in or anything like that. They've kept all their staff employed. And they've just carried on with a view to the future and to the long term. And they've done more and more of the things they did well. And they've tried to cut out the things they do badly and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, that is likely that it could pay off in the next 2-3 years. Whereas their competitors are in a right old mess. they could be very well placed. And, you know, and so that's an example of a company sort of like managing itself well through the crisis. You then get other companies that are using the crisis to do lots of investment and restructuring and things they should have done, but they were sort of too busy to do. And I think we're going to get in a situation where they've all got hiring freezes, right? No one's recruiting anybody. And what's going to happen is revenues are going to increase, but costs are going to stay low. And you're going to get high profitability, higher than you had before, because they're sweating the assets. You're going to get that in a lot of companies, I think.
I would caveat that, though, Pete, again. We've got to remember that Fever-Tree is essentially an outsourcing supplier of premium drinks, mixers, okay?
Yeah.
They don't do a lot of the stuff themselves, okay? They only have 170 employees.
Yeah.
Yeah?
So which gives them a low cost base.
So the low, very low cost base. It goes back to the OTB stuff you were saying before. They've got a very low cost base. So, you know, if they got rid of 10% of their workforce, that's 16 people, Pete. You know, there's people talking yesterday about 10% of the workforce, 375 people. You know, 20,000 people at X, Y, and Z being laid off.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a big difference. So they've got a very low cost base, Fever-Tree. And, you know, again, the example of if you had cash, you could have been buying that share, yeah, back in March at £8.88. Yeah?
Oh, yeah.
A few days ago, it was £21.
Oh, incredible, isn't it? Incredible.
So that's why it's important to have cash.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
You're thinking, you know what, I'm so glad I didn't buy Fever-Tree at 20 quid. I'm so glad I didn't buy it at 30 quid. Yeah, it was an offer. Yeah, at £8.88. If you haven't got the cash, you can't buy it, Pete. If you haven't got the cash, you can't average down. So you're praying and hoping that it gets back to 20 quid. And now it's back at 20 quid. What do you do? You're thinking, oh, I might need to get out now because I've got back to break even. So you're caught in the psychology of the market.
Yeah, the psychology is an absolute... It is so difficult, and it's not just the market psychology, it's your own psychology.
Absolutely.
It's like even when you know it's on the floor, because things were so scary back on that, I think it was a Wednesday and a Thursday in a certain week, which looking back now certainly was the capitulation. It was just terrifying. It was horrible. And, you know, it's like you would need balls of steel to buy in that circumstance. You know, a lot of clever people did, but I certainly couldn't. You know, there's no way I would have the guts to do that. Well, I wouldn't even have the cash. But
well, I mean, but some people did, Pete, and they made hay, and some of them have already started selling back into the market and cashing up again, because I've seen how fast the markets have rallied, and they've made significant profits. And congratulations to all of those people that did that. You know what I mean? I didn't buy that much. I sold more in March, as we said last time. I bought ICMA and it from 17 odd quid, and it went up to 25. And I bought some other stocks, which I haven't revealed as yet, which are doing okay. But, you know, the beauty of having the cash is being able to take risk if you so wish. And as you've said already, your cash sitting on the balance is generating nothing.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So if you've got it in your portfolio and you can get a 50% return in the space of 2 months because the market's been pumped and stimulated up to the yin yang, then why not? Rather than just hoping and praying that your stock can go back up and you can break even, you could actually make 30, 40, 50%. Yeah?
Yeah.
Sorry, Pete, I want you to talk about a couple of stocks here that have done exceptionally well and would have given people opportunity to use that cash. Okay?
Yeah, far away, mate. Far away.
You had a Twitter favourite, okay? Games Workshop, okay?
Yeah, which, GAW.
Prior to the COVID, these are all COVID-related plays, okay? Which have been impacted by COVID lockdown and on the rest. Games Workshop, Pete, prior to COVID issue, £73.50 a high, or there or thereabouts.
Yeah.
Okay? If you had the cash in March, you could buy it at £35.64. Okay?
Yeah.
Now, the stock has rallied. And recently had a high of £80.90. Now, what would you prefer? Wow. Gnashing your teeth at 36 quid, thinking, oh my God, I've made a mistake selling it, or actually buying it at 36 quid and watching it go to 80 quid?
I mean, imagine.
Yeah, so that's an opportunity missed because you haven't got the cash or you haven't got the risk profile to take that opportunity. Yeah?
Yeah.
Okay, another one, which I don't have, you don't have. Frontier Developments, Pete.
Okay. FDev, yeah.
FDev, right? Prior to the COVID-related declines, £14.44 was its 52-week high.
Okay? Yeah.
Got sold down to sub-£10, £9.94 in February.
Yeah.
Okay? Recent high, £21.20. Got
what?
No cash, you can't buy it.
Incredible.
Okay? Ocado, right? Which we've all written off, said it was always too pricey. No good, no good, no good. How many people have said, can't buy it, it's too expensive? Me? You?
I said it, yeah. Right? I wouldn't have touched it with yours, mate, a few years ago.
Well, there you go. So £14, Pete, pre-COVID debacle. Okay?
Yeah.
Sorry, I got the FDev low wrong. £8.29 was the March low.
Okay.
Ocado's low in February, £9.94. Yeah?
Yeah.
Recent high, Pete, £22.49. Yeah?
What?
100% in the space of 3 months.
Juicy.
Okay. Let me give you another one. Plus 500, pre-COVID high, £9.60. Low, £7.45. Recent high, £13.26.
Incredible.
Okay. And my favourite, which you've almost touched on without even realising it, Pete. Yeah? Holford's.
Okay. Oh, yeah.
Pre-COVID high, £2.40 back in last year. Been absolutely spanked. Flat tyres everywhere, okay?
Uh-huh.
49
flat batteries.
49 pence, right, Pete?
49
pence during March, right?
Yeah.
Recently hit £1.97. Nobody wanted to know it until Boris came out and said, I think you guys might want to start cycling into work. And then it started to rally. The lows of March, April, sub 50p, nearly £2, Pete. No cash, you can't join in.
I'm always saying it, and I'm sure I've mentioned it on a podcast. HFD will still be here after Armageddon and the asteroids have hit, and they'll just be the ants and you know, bacteria and Halfords. It's amazing. It just, all my life, it's gone from crisis to boom, to crisis to boom, to crisis to boom. And it just always does that. It's an amazing stock, it really is.
And this is why you have to become a student of the market. Not just look and wait and see what X, Y, and Z is saying or what X, Y, and Z is buying. Look at what's going on to the stocks. Look at what's going on to the market. Are you open to that risk? Don't wait for E or she or them to buy the stock. Go and buy it yourself and take the risk and then have that revelation and backslapping when you're doing it for yourself and say, that was me, I bought that. I took
that
risk.
Have that learning.
I did that and I took that risk with my own money. I didn't wait for X, Y, and Z to say they'd bought it or sold it. I did that myself with my own research. I saw that opportunity and I went out and did it.
Yeah, you know, I was thinking about this the other day. I haven't really talked about it. I haven't, you know me, whenever any stupid idea comes in my head, I have to tweet it out or something. I'm just a nightmare. But one thing I was thinking about the other day was how I think there's a big advantage now that I've had like 20 years in the market, well, 22 years in the market or whatever it is. It's like in my brain, I'm building up over time, incrementally, like a knowledge base of loads of different companies. And it's like when you have that, and every time a new bit of news comes out, it's like an incremental add-on in your brain to that particular your knowledge of that particular company. It sort of gives you more of this long-term perspective. And it's like when, you know, you have a company that goes through a bad patch, your sort of knowledge of the history and knowledge of the company helps you ascertain whether it's likely to recover or whatever it's going to do. Obviously, you're going to get it wrong sometimes. Like, you know, I've probably got it wrong on French Connection, you know, FCCN. But I did notice today, I had to say this, I did notice it was up to like 14% today or something, which I thought was really funny on the day we're recording the podcast.
It's been rallying since we mentioned that it was a
it's so funny.
Stop, mate. You know what I mean?
Oh, it's just so classic. But you see what I mean? It's like this sort of. I think one of the mistakes, right, that people make is all this flip-flopping in and out of stocks. If you're in a stock, out of the stock, in the stock, out of the stock, every few weeks or whatever you're doing, You never learn anything about that stock. It's like all you learn about is just for a snapshot in time that it went up and you made some money and you got out. But what you're really doing is cutting the legs off of what actually could be an amazing share if you just held on for it for 2, 3, 4 years. You could probably make many multiples and you wouldn't have all these costs of continue go in and out. I mean, it's just bonkers, I think.
Pete, I don't spend 140 hours researching a stock to generate 5%, 10%, 15% to be in and out and flip-flopping. I don't have the time. I don't have the energy to waste on doing that.
Got things to do.
But other people are traders, Pete. Accumulating those scalps of 5, 10, 15%. And they're trying to do that 3 times, 4 times a week or a month regarding a particular stock. And that's their strategy. And that's what works for them. Yeah,
but it's fair enough if you can do it, but I think a lot of people can.
A lot of people can't. But the point I'm trying to make is the vast majority of traders spend very little time actually knowing anything about the company. They've looked at certain charts. They're only using charts. And that's what they do. If you ask them a fundamental question about the stock, they couldn't answer you. They couldn't tell you who the CEO or the CFO is or what actually are all the assets or all the different solutions that that company provides. They're not interested. They look at the charts, they throw some things on it, and they find what the EMA is of that or the Bollinger Band is for it. And they go, right, okay, that's a really good spot to buy it. The chart's telling me to buy here, and they go for it. I only know of one person that does it professionally that has made a success of it long-term trading. And that's Jason, that's StealthServe. I don't know anybody else that has done it long-term and made a success out of trading. That's the only person that I know. Everyone else, they've got their other jobs, they do other stuff, and they do it part-time. And they're hobby traders, hobbyists.
Yeah. Well, no, I think that's a good point. I mean, I think what you said is absolutely right. If you are a trader and you know you're a trader, you admit you're a trader, you're proud of being a trader, and you're good at being a trader, and you use chart signals and stuff, and you're damn good at it, and risk management, stop losses, all that kind of stuff, brilliant, and fair play to you. I think what I find frustrating is when people pretend to be long-term investors, and their idea of long-term investment is holding a share for 4 weeks. That ain't long-term investment, I'm sorry.
It's not, Pete, but what you've got to remember is, this is psychology again, mate, and fear of missing out. What happens is, and you get these individuals, and I've done it, you've done it in the past, I'm sure you have, Pete.
I do it all the time, mate, sure.
Well, you see an opportunity, and you're not saying unless you're saying it's an investment, and then it turns out not to be, that's a different thing. But when you're saying, aha, there's an opportunity, and you're buying it, and you're selling it 3 weeks or a couple of months later, that is in fact a trade. Everyone's allowed to do that. Everyone should do what they want to do. But you're absolutely spot on. If you're saying I'm an investor, then don't be tweeting about a trade that's in and out 5 minutes or a week or a month, because that's not investing. That is trading. It's very rare that I talk about my tradings that I do on Twitter, because I don't want people to be jumping in and then the next day for me to say, I'm out, which is what's happening on Twitter right now.
Oh, yeah, so much of it. Mate, is that all the stocks you wanted to talk about?
I wanted to talk also about two stocks, which I think also, just to help other people just look at what's going on underlying certain stuff.
Yeah.
And I wanted to talk, Pete, about AJ Bell, and Hargreaves Lansdown, both of which, Hargreaves Lansdown has been given a real, run for its money in a sense of, the Woodford debacle, the Well 50, index that they had and all the rest of it. And what is very, very interesting regarding AJ Bell and Hargreaves Lansdown, because...
Mate, the TIDM codes on those. So that's AJB, isn't it, for AJ Bell?
Yep.
It's HL dot for Hargreaves Lansdown.
Yep. Both of those stocks have had massive inflows, Pete. Because of the lockdown, lockdowns happened in February, right? February, March time.
Yeah.
Okay. X amount of people are at home. Yeah. Male and female are going, what should we do? Twiddle thumbs. Sit in the garden. Play with the kids. Whatever. Lots of people, Pete, have decided to start trading and investing.
Oh, right? My Lord.
So
Hargreaves is going to end.
No, Pete. You know, Hargreaves Lansdown and AJ Bell have had a significant increase in total customers increasing. Yeah. And in that, the revenues have gone up. Yeah. Number of accounts opened have gone up. Yeah. And I think it was Hargreaves Lansdown was saying that they've added net new business of 4 billion. Yeah. Exceeded 4 billion for the first time.
Wow.
Added 94,000.
Big numbers, isn't it?
Big
numbers. Big numbers.
Added 94,000 new customers.
Wow.
Right? So those individuals are now buying and selling shares. Right? So,
Or buying funds or whatever
or
they do.
buying funds,
Yeah.
sorry, or buying funds as well, right?
Yeah.
So you've got AJ Bell, which another example here of why cash could be king. Current share price, or when I last looked at it, was £4.01. Okay,
Yeah.
the March low was £2.29. Okay, so you've nearly doubled your money if you bought near the March low if you're brave enough. Okay,
Oh,
the
yeah.
concerns I have regarding AJB is the PE is 47. It's always been richly priced, Pete. Yield of
Tis
what
it's high, isn't it?
yield of 1.2. Hargreaves Lansdown price currently, or the last time I looked, £16.17. Hit a
Yeah.
low of £11, Pete, £11.47, a PE of 30, yielding 2%.
So that
Yeah.
one's not such a high PE.
It's not such a PE.
I guess these things are on high PEs because they're seen as, I mean, there's a lot of lock-in with these things. Once they've got the customer's money, most customers are sticky.
Yes.
And yeah, and there's a lot of that, yeah.
And I think it is with AJ Bell that Invesco just sold £123 million worth of stock as well, and
Yeah.
reduced their size of their stake significantly. So they sold at £4 a big stake, and then and the share price is still at £4. So that shows you the strength of other people wanting to buy that as well.
Yeah.
I don't hold any of those stocks. I've been buying some finance stocks, finance related stocks recently. Some utilities, I call them utilities, and I will reveal them as and when I feel like it. I'm not in the market of spending 120 hours and then saying to people, here are. So that's just the way it is.
Yeah. Well, it's funny. I've been more of a trader lately. I've been in and out of the FTSE 100 and the S&P 500. I had a bit of a panic, a bit of a wobble, mate, at the weekend, because I have been bigly, bigly long on the S&P 500 and bigly long on the FTSE 100. And what happened was, we had all the situation with the protests and more concerning the riots. That was what I was worried about, the looting and the riots in America. And so over the weekend, I sort of got a bit jittery and I thought, oh Christ, these markets could go pretty smelly on Monday. And when you've got big spread bet positions and the market tanks, you're in trouble. So I ended up sort of thinking about it and thinking about it and thinking about it. And literally 4:30 on Monday morning, I couldn't think about it anymore. And
Sorry,
I looked.
Pete, you said AM, morning.
Yeah. I
Oh
couldn't
my
sleep.
gosh.
I couldn't sleep. So what
Oh.
happened? What happened? And the thing is, I always write a blog that has like charts in it and whatever every weekend. I'd written the blog on Sunday night.
Yeah.
I actually had to amend the blog just before I published it and just add in an extra paragraph saying, oh my Lord, I've just heard about the riots. I'm a little bit concerned, And anyway, so I lie there in bed thinking about it and thinking about it. And I'm running all these model scenarios. So I'm thinking, right, if the market falls 4%, how does that affect my positions? If it falls 6%, how does that affect my position? I really thought the markets could take a kick in, yeah? Anyway, so I'm thinking about it, and I sort of come up with a plan in my head, right? And I thought about it for ages, and I thought, right, what I need to do now is to log into my IG Index account because of the FTSE 100 and the S&P 500 are like they trade like futures, they're out of market hours. And I thought I'd just log in and see what the situation is now, and that'll help my decision, yeah? So I log into the account, and I can't believe it. The bloody things are up. They were up. I was like, oh my God, I don't believe this. So do you know what? I just thought, I can't be doing with this pain. And I just closed all of the positions, banked a pretty juicy profit. I think I banked like 1.5% of my portfolio, which wasn't bad at all in a couple of weeks. 60% return on the capital. And I just thought I'd stand aside. So basically, come Monday morning, everything was fine. It's all calmed down. I'm not putting another bet on the S&P 500 because that's all had such a good run. But with the FTSE 100 breaking higher, I've been reopening in a slightly smaller amount, and I might do a little bit more, the FTSE 100 long, because technically they just look so good. And with oil going up, I think it's going to take FTSE 100 with it.
Okie dokie.
But I'm driven by the charts. I don't think about, apart from obviously I had a bit of a panic over the rioting situation. I mean, obviously when you get one-off events like that, the charts can't really predict those. But the charts are very good at predicting what's going to happen. And as we've talked many a time, the 1321 EMA is like the golden thing for me. Don't ever trade in the wrong direction to that indicator. If it's telling you to be long and you're short, you're making a mistake is what I tend to find, and vice versa.
Yeah, I was going to say, Pete, if you are struggling ever to sleep and you have this foreboding regarding what's going on externally to the markets, I will send you some tapes.
Oh, yeah, I bet you sent me some because I was having, yeah.
I've sent you some before. I'll send you some more to deal with coping with being stressed or being unable to sleep.
Why was I went through this period like a year ago. I couldn't sleep. And I don't think it was worries about the market. I don't know what it was. I just couldn't bloody sleep. And you sent me these things and it was like, oh, man, I sleep like a log now. I'm never wake up now. I can't wake up. It's terrible.
No,
oh, goodness me. But no, mate, funnily enough, my strategy of hedging and going long has actually worked a treat. I'm so pleased with how it's gone because, you know, my portfolio went back to break even yesterday for the year. I'm so pleased about that. Unfortunately, today the markets have dipped, so I've gone slightly negative again, I think. But, you know, I'm quite pleased with how it works. And my only thing that I need to do better in future, I need to hedge a bit bigger. That was the only thing I didn't do as well as I could have done. But overall, it's worked as a really good strategy. And it helps your psychology massively. You don't worry about it so much because you know you're making money on the shorts.
And that's the beauty of hedging when it works well, Pete.
Oh,
that you can hopefully sleep better at night because you know you've got that edge. You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I mean,
go on.
I mean, it's funny with the situation on Sunday night. It wasn't so much that I was worried I was going to be wiped out or anything stupid like that. It was just 4-5% on a fairly big long exposure if I don't need to. Do you know what I mean?
Absolutely.
And once I saw that the positions were nicely in profit, I just thought, don't even bother getting involved in the situation. Because the trouble is with those riots, and it could have gone anyway. Things could have got worse and it could have really spooked the markets. And I just thought, there's no point taking that gamble. Because when you're leveraged, it's just so risky to do that.
Absolutely. I mean, for me, the markets have been relatively kind because I'd refocused my position. I got asked, I think it was last week or a couple of days back, the assumption was I'd sold everything because I'd made such a fundamental change X amount of podcasts ago when I surprised you regarding what I was doing.
Yeah. And that's a while ago now, wasn't it?
It's a while ago now. And we spoke about ITM doing really, really well.
Yeah,
for me and the markets going from 20 odd pence. I think the last time I looked, it was £3.50 odd yesterday. I've not looked at it today, but my portfolio, Pete, well, was in within 1.5. I think I spoke to you on the phone about this. 1.5% of being at an all time record high on my portfolio, despite the weight of my cash. Yeah, back on I think it was the 13th. Remember that day when I was speaking to you when AstraZeneca hit 90 quid?
Oh yeah.
Had it got to £91, I would have been at a all-time record high, and since then it's fallen back. But ITM, Loop, and other couple of stocks that I've held have done significantly well for me. So I'm happy with the markets. And, you know, for those that are at break-even, I'm really, really pleased because the distress that was caused between March and April with the markets just, falling into abyss just caught fund managers and everybody else by surprise. And on that note, Pete, X amount of fund managers have lost their jobs. I'm not sure you've been keeping track of it.
Oh, I hadn't heard that.
Yeah, some
wow.
Some fund managers have lost their jobs because of how poorly their portfolios have behaved. And obviously the main one that everyone knows of is Burnett, the protege of Woodford.
He lost
his job in the last couple of months as well. So he's gone. He'll be going off
what,
to do something.
What was his name? What was it?
Mark Burnett.
Mark
Burnett. You know.
Incredible.
So, yeah, so there's lots of change going on and all impacted by COVID. So there's unknown consequences, you see, you know, regarding people and fund managers getting it wrong.
Another, what was I reading about? Oh, yeah, Witan. Was it
Witan?
W-T-A-N.
Yeah, they sacked, I think, two.
Terrible performance.
Three fund managers as well.
Yeah, terrible performance. And you just...
So, you know, we're mere private investors, mate, and we're trying to do our best. And some of us are doing really, really well. Some of us are not. But fund managers are there with billions that they've got to manage, hundreds of millions that they've got to manage. And some of them do extremely well. Some of them won't. Some of the ones that are doing better are off the radar and people just focus on the fund managers that they do not know. I would say research the funds and look at the charts and look at the portfolios of some of the fund managers that are doing well, that are off the radar. Because if they're doing well year to date, I bet you over the next 2 years, 3 years, 5 years, those funds will be on the radar. But if you can get in there now regarding the funds and they're off the radar, you will do exceptionally well. If they can perform despite COVID, they'll perform well.
I agree with what you said there. I think one of the most important things with funds, as much as trying to get a sense of the track record of the manager, a lot of it is look at what they're holding. Because quite often you can look at their holdings, you think, oh my God, I wouldn't hold that. What's he holding that for? Do you know what I mean? I look through it, I think, what the hell? No wonder they're doing bloody awfully. It's just such a bad portfolio. And then you see other ones, you think, yeah, I can see that they're in exactly the right companies. You know, it's just they're black and white. And again, that's another thing of having this knowledge base built up over years of what are good companies and what are bad companies. It really helps with that kind of understanding. And of course, a lot of people who go into funds won't have that understanding because it's not what they do. You know, and because they're trusting the fund manager to do it for them.
Absolutely. I mean, this goes back to what we've always said, Pete, the importance of doing your own research. You know what's going on regarding that company, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
And if you've got the cash, you can either ride it all the way down. If you think that's the bottom, you can then add. Once you see the markets, you know, having a little bit of a curve going back upwards. But if you don't know the company, you might get panicked out of it. And if you know the company, but you are absolutely objectively biased, that company might not recover. And you're adding all the way down to the bottom. And then when it doesn't recover, you're sitting there going, you know, the classic case, and I keep banging on about it, Metro, yeah?
Oh, yeah, MTRO, yeah.
Aston Martin.
Dog bowls.
Aston Martin, you know, great cars, rubbish company to invest in. You've just got to be careful because, you know, these companies, some of them will not recover despite the markets recovering.
No, exactly. Mate, I'm mindful of the time. Can I just throw in one stock that I think looks very interesting? I don't hold it myself and I'm not going to be buying it, I don't think, but I know listeners might find it an interesting.
Make it quick before I say catheter.
Yeah, mate. Mate, you're just adding minutes here. You're adding valuable minutes. Right, mate. How do you pronounce it? Lusico.
L-U-C-E.
Had a trading update today. Another example of one that's probably doing better than people expected. The thing that's really interesting about this one is there's a massive gap on the chart. So it's like it had some problems, I don't know, a year ago or something. It absolutely tanked and it gapped down like a million miles. Yeah, just gapped right down. And then it's gone like sideways for ages and ages and ages and ages. And it's in this like sideways range at the bottom. The point is, if and when it breaks out higher, there's this massive gap, a vacuum, with nothing there in terms of natural resistance. Well, you know, there's no resistance levels where punters are going to say, oh, I'm going to sell because it's got to that resistance level. It can just go whip through that like an absolute bullet. So I think that could be. Have you got the chart there, mate?
I've just pulled it up, Pete.
Can you see the chart?
I can see the chart.
You see the gap?
You're going back to end of January, sorry.
Yeah.
And you're looking at 154 was its high.
Yeah.
And for a variety of different reasons, including COVID, it got absolutely spanked down to 39 pence, Peter.
Wow.
So if you had the cash, you could have been buying at 40, 45, 50 pence. Today, on that good news, and again, I always talk about watching the volume on these things, ladies and gents. Yeah?
Yeah.
The volume is 1.133 million shares traded.
Yeah.
90-day average volume of shares traded is 393.1K.
So big interest in it.
Big move. Up 14% today.
Yeah.
Closing at £1.19. Yeah. So if you could buy at 39 pence, if you had the cash.
Yeah.
If you didn't have the cash, tough. You could buy it at 39 pence and it's now at £1.19.
Now, where's the breakout level? Because I think it's not much above that.
The breakout level, if you're going back to March, last sort of push, it's sitting right there now at 120. It breaks out from 120, you're then up to, let's have a look, 135, and then you're banging on the doors of its high at 150 at some point later in the year.
So anyway, I think it's an interesting one. I don't hold it, but I think it's worth having a look at and mulling it over.
Cool. Well, there you are, folks. I think we've covered that. We did as little politics as we possibly could. We didn't touch on Black Lives Matter, and we're here in 160 minutes. We've done plus. So I hope
you've done loads, mate.
We've done loads. I hope you enjoyed it. I hope you've listened. You're going to share it with people. Thank you all those people that have subscribed. Thank you all those people in Stoke-on-Trent that have been listening. That I don't know why. Loads of people in Stoke-on-Trent.
Thanks to Ukraine. Thanks, Ukraine.
As always to the Ukraine. Thank you to our new listeners in the US and in Canada and also in Morocco. Not sure why, but Morocco. Hello, Morocco. Thank you all for listening. Ladies and gents, thank you ever so much. Please subscribe to the channels. We're on Spotify, which you would have found last week we put on. So we're on Audio Boom, Spotify, iTunes, and SoundCloud. Join us there. We'll be back again soon. Take care. God bless. Stay safe, people. Look after each other.
See you later. Cheers. Bye.
Take care. Bye-bye, guys. Bye-bye, ladies.
This Twin Peaks Investing Podcast was brought to you in association with ShareePad from ShareScope, the UK's number one investment data and analysis software. For private investors and traders, visit shareScope.co.uk and discover the advantage.